Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And good afternoon to all of you along Florida's Space Coast and around the nation and around the world listening in online on the web at WMMBAM.com or live here in Brevard County. I am Jim Behnke, and this is the October 24th, 2009 edition of Space Talk, brought to you, as always, by United Space Alliance, innovation you can trust and performance you can count on. Well, you're invited to join in the conversation today, and this is going to be a good one. If you've ever wanted a chance to talk to an honest-to-gosh moonwalker, one of 12 men who have actually been there and done it, then this is your day to do it by giving us a call at 768-1240, star 1240 if you're an AT&T wireless customer in the Space Coast here. Out of town, the long-distance number, 321-768-1240. And if that weren't enough, we'll also take your questions via email. We're monitoring our AOL account. spacetalking@AOL.com is the address to send us your email questions and comments. This is going to be a very, very quick hour. We've got a number of guests lined up to chat with you about a variety of things. We want to just take a really quick moment and speak to the big news of the week. Of course, Thursday, the Augustine panel released its final report, I guess presented it to the White House. And no surprises there. The executive summary had come out a month ago, and again, the space community knew what was coming, and a lot of hand-wringing to be done, decisions by the White House to be made. Probably not going to learn anything more about where we're going to go in space till the budget comes out early next year. But it all sets the stage for the big news this week, which, is, of course, is the Ares 1X test flight. At 8 a.m. on Tuesday, all systems go for that launch so far. The launch officially cleared to fly by NASA yesterday. There's a simulation underway today at the Cape. Some work done tomorrow. Monday, a relatively quiet day for the launch team. And then they all come into work about 1 a.m. Tuesday and count it down to an 8 a.m. launch. And I, your host of Space Talk, Jim Behnke, will be with Bill Mick, live at the Kennedy Space Center press site for the entire Bill Mick Show Tuesday morning, bringing you live launch coverage of the Ares 1X. And it is during those hours of Bill Mick Show on Tuesday morning that we will get into all the details about the Ares rocket, the 1X test flight, the Augustine panel, the recommendations that were made, the options that were presented, and what that might all mean for the Space Coast in particular and the nation in general. So look forward to that. That's going to be a big deal, again, starting with Bill Mick's show, 6 a.m. live from the Kennedy Space Center press site on Tuesday. Well, let's give you a little insight quick, too, as to how this program is put together. We just recently celebrated the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission, the first lunar landing mission last July. And once you know it, Apollo 12's anniversary is coming up now, too, the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 12 flight, which is actually in mid-November, the launch taking place November 14th, 1969. Now, there's some things going on the Space Coast to celebrate and commemorate that event, which kind of happened the week before. And, of course, if we're going to talk about it on the show and give anyone a chance to participate, we want to do that in advance of those events. And the perhaps more ideal weekend to do that would have been next weekend, but next weekend is Halloween. And the folks that we wanted to have online to talk to us about that just weren't available on that spooky holiday. And so we back it up to today, October 24th. And, of course, the Augustine panel came out. We've got the Ares 1 to deal with. And we're just going to set all that aside right now and spend the rest of the hour talking about Apollo 12 and the anniversary of the second lunar landing mission. And to give you an idea of what is going to happen along the Kennedy Space Center, along the Space Coast, to commemorate that great event, again, the second lunar landing, we have Beth Higdon on from the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation. And Beth, you're joining us today to tell us about a little bit of everything that's going to happen, the weekend of November 7th, I believe. Is that correct?
Correct.
The Astronaut Scholarship Foundation has some great events lined up for the weekend of November 7th and 8th. We're going to kick things off during the day on November 7th with our astronaut autograph and memorabilia show at Kennedy Space Center, where over 30 astronauts and space icons will be signing autographs in the Diva Center out there.
Okay.
And then that evening, we are going to have a Apollo 12 gala in the at Cape Canaveral. Tickets are $200 a piece. There's still a few seats available, so if you want to come out and celebrate with all the guys that will be at our autograph show, they'll be there that evening for an anniversary dinner to celebrate the 40th of Apollo 12.
Now, $200 a seat for a dinner is a far cry from, you know, $6 for a value meal at McDonald's. You're going to get a good meal, but let's talk about what that money is going toward and what kind of what the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation is all about.
The Astronaut Scholarship Foundation was started by the Mercury 7 astronauts back in 1984 with the goal of helping America retain its world leadership in science and technology. So we now give away 19 $10,000 scholarships annually to college students across the nation.
Uh-huh.
Here locally, we give to UCF. So these aren't necessarily kids that want to be astronauts. They're just people in the science and technology fields that are going to make a difference. We choose kids based on being the best and the brightest, so they don't have to need the money, but knowing that when they get the money, it's going to go towards being for them to be able to complete their research or do research that they didn't even think they would be able to do because of monetary reasons.
And that's a real inspirational thing, a drive. I know you have quite a few former astronauts that are part of your team, part of your group. In fact, a large number. And a lot of them are going to be here that weekend of the 7th and 8th.
Yes. Apollo 15, Al Warden, is our chair. He's been our chair for several years now. Our whole board, except for occasional two or three people, are all astronauts.
Uh-huh.
We have, astronauts from the Mercury to the shuttle program participating in what we do in our mission.
Well, let's go back to November 7th. You talked about a autograph signing event at the Diva Center, which, of course, is at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex.
Correct.
Do you buy a ticket to get into that event? That event free? Is that a separate thing, or how does that work?
To actually get into the show, it's $10 after you get into Kennedy Space Center. So if you're an annual pass holder, it's just an extra $10. However, you need to purchase Kennedy Space Center tickets, and then our additional ticket is $10.
Okay.
We also have ticket packages on our website where it incorporates things. Like, you can get a ticket package that would incorporate the autograph show and the dinner, and we're also hosting an Apollo 13 lunch that weekend. So we also have some great ticket packages that you can kind of incorporate whatever you want to do that weekend with us. The autograph show is a great way for you to be able to spend one-on-one time with the astronauts, but also through those ticket packages, it gets you an additional time with them at more intimate private reception. Of course, the Apollo 12 dinner, we're offering at the Apollo 12 dinner a photo session with the Apollo 12 astronauts. So
wow.
Dick Gordon and Alan Bean, you can have your picture taken with them, which, of course, is an additional fee because we are a charity.
Right. With each of these fees, I just want to emphasize that this is all fundraising. This is all money going toward the scholarship. This is not just to line the pockets of the astronauts or anything. This is a good educational scholarship thing that is worthy of everyone's support, and I hope. Now, if they want to sign up for anything, is there anything advanced reservations? I guess the dinner is the big thing.
Yes. All of our tickets are online at astronautscholarship.org. Any kind of ticket package you would want to get or dinner tickets, yes, of course, they need to be purchased in advance so we know to expect you. But if you just want to attend the autograph show on Saturday or Sunday, you can get the $10 walk-up ticket.
Great.
And I want to make sure and point out that the astronaut autographs are an additional fee once you get inside.
Sure.
So,
okay.
And they range from, $25 up to, $350 if you were looking for Buzz's autograph.
Yeah. Good old Buzz Aldrin. Now, that's good. Good. And God bless him. So, well, Beth, thanks for being on with us. We're going to continue talking about Apollo 12 when we come back from this brief break. I'm Jim Behnke. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Stay tuned. We're going to have the wife of the late Pete Conrad, commander of Apollo 12, join us here in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
Well, and again, welcome back to Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and your calls are welcome here in the studio. 321-768-1240 is the number from anywhere in the world. Star 1240 on your AT&T wireless phone if you're local here on the Space Coast. And once again, you can send us your comments via email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, on this day, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 12 lunar landing mission, the second landing mission in the series. And that flight launched in mid-November 1969. We're celebrating it now today to give you ample time to plug into the events that are planned for the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation, putting on some neat things the weekend of November 7th and 8th, as we just talked with Beth Higdon about it. But let me tell you a little bit more about Apollo 12, and let's get into some more of the details of that flight. Now, Pete Conrad was the commander of Apollo 12, and he was, without a doubt, and in my book, the most colorful and perhaps the most fun of the astronauts of that early space program. He and Wally Schirra, boy, I mean, they're right there neck and neck. And Pete tells the story that is one of my favorites, and maybe you've heard it before too, but, you know, when they were applying to be astronauts, and Pete was going for the original Mercury astronaut group way back in 1959, one of the things that that the astronauts candidates were tested on, of course, was by the psychologist, you know, how stable are you, what's your mind like, you know, and all that. And one of the things the psychologist did was to give each of the astronaut candidates a white card, a blank white card, and they'd say to the guy, "What do you see?" And Pete's most famous response was, "It's upside down." What a great answer. What a great answer. And he was playing with them, and he was fooling with them, and it gives you real insight into the character of this incredible astronaut who went on to fly twice in Gemini and once on Apollo, and then commanded the first Skylab mission and quite literally saved the Skylab program pretty much physically all by himself with some of the miraculous things he did during a spacewalk. Unfortunately, we lost Pete in a motorcycle accident in 1999, but I can guarantee you that his legacy lives on in this nation, and keeping that fire alive is my friend Nancy Conrad, the wife of Pete Conrad, and Nancy joins us from our nation's capital, I believe. Nancy, did you get home okay?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Jim.
Good. Well, welcome aboard. Thanks for being with us. And let's start talking about Pete Conrad. I'll give you a little story just there. Let me ask you in this way. What was the third man to walk on the moon, quote-unquote, really like?
It was exactly as you called it. His motto was, "If you can't be good, be colorful." and he was actually both. I mean, he was a complete character. And he, great storyteller, full of beans, full of life, but never full of himself. And I really admired him so much because he was gracious. He was hospitable to everyone. He reached out and touched everyone and never took himself seriously.
Yeah.
And I think he always remembered to have fun.
And I think between the two of us, we could spend the next 4 or 5 hours telling stories. And we only have a few minutes. But let me ask you, Nancy, particularly fond memories that he had of the Apollo 12 flight in particular. Were there stories that he often repeated about that flight?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he just loved flying with Dick and Al because they were best buddies before they went to the moon, and they were best buddies on the moon and best buddies when they came back.
Yeah.
And I think that was so special to him. And, you know, on the back side of the moon, there is no dark side. We know that, even though Pink Floyd sings about it.
That's right.
He asked Al Bean if Al would like to fly the vehicle, and Al said, "Wow, sure." And he really wanted Al to do that just to experience it and have as much fun as he was having. And I think Al would back me up on this, that Al was the only lunar landing module pilot that took the controls on the backside of the moon.
Wow.
Of course, you know, it wasn't a safety issue, and there was no problem. Pete just wanted to have Al have as much fun as he was having.
That's right. And I want to ask you this, too. Of course, you know, the Tom Hanks series From the Earth to the Moon, the incredible Apollo 12 episode of the three guys and the Corvettes and all those stories they told, and floating naked in space and Pete ordering the guys to go to the bathroom and all of that. Was any of that real? Is that pretty
well,
much
know,
the way it
Tom
was?
Tom Hanks got all that information from a little comic book we published called Moonshot, The Flight of Apollo 12. And that came out on the 25th anniversary. And we were, I had a little company, and we were publishing history in comic book format.
Yeah.
And so the most definitive story of Apollo 12 is that comic book, which Al and Dick also collaborated on.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really the most chronicled, the best history there is on Apollo 12 in that little comic book.
And all those little things happened.
They did.
Isn't that incredible?
They did.
Well, and so here we are 40 years later, Nancy, you know, Apollo 12 celebrating it. You know, sometimes it gets lost in the shadow of Apollo 11 and all of that, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you think Pete would be saying and thinking about that particular flight all these years later?
Well, there was a thing done by the BBC years ago, Jim, on the 25th anniversary, and they asked him a question very similar to that, so I'll just use his words. And he said, you know, I don't sit around thinking about what I did. I sit around thinking about what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And my guess is that would be his response. He loved that flight. He loved Skylab. To him, it was the joy of flight, and he didn't care where he went or what he flew, and if you put wings on a box of cereal, he'd fly that too. He was just happy flying. So, you know, he was working on the next generation of vehicles and the commercialization of space when he was in the accident. So
right.
I think he would be very much thinking about the future and just in reveling in the fact that he and Dick and Al were still good buddies and they had a great time and continued to do so.
Well, and that, you know, all the guys that have left the program, they all contributed in some way. But what was neat about Pete, I thought, you know, up until we lost him, is just what you were saying. He continued to contribute. He was working with, I believe, McDonnell Douglas before it was all folded up into something else. And
well, everything became Boeing, didn't
it? I guess it all got assimilated into Boeing.
Yeah, actually, Pete created four companies, Jim, working on the commercialization of space.
Well,
and T.K. Mattingly was working with us on the rocket company, he had a satellite company. I mean, he was really knowing that the next step for man in space was going to be space travel, not tourism, travel.
Right. Well, and
you could go from California to Italy in 45 minutes in low Earth orbit. And that's what he was working.
And you mentioned the cereal box with wings, but you know what? They pretty much did that with the Delta Clipper, with this basically wingless box. It's sort of this tube pyramid combination thing with rocket engines. And he was literally flying at remote control. I mean, he was the guy behind the wheel of this rocket being tested.
He was the fastest mouse in the South. We were at White Sands Missile Range, and they had an FOCC, a Flight Operations Control Center, and he was flying that thing remote with that little mouse, and he loved that bird.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the DCX Experimental. It was designed to fly four flights and ended up flying about 14 flights.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the folks that were on that team got on board with Pete and the companies that he created to go forward in commercial space. And, in fact, a lot of those guys are now working with Jeff Bezos at Blue Origin.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I told you this was going to go by fast. We got about 2 minutes left. I want to make sure we spend time talking about Pete's legacy and about the activities that you're doing to bring some innovators to the forefront and get them excited about their future.
Well, thanks, Jim. We have a competition called the Spirit of Innovation Awards. And kids that win that become Pete Conrad Scholars. And we challenge teams of high school students to create products to solve real-world challenges using science and technology. It's a national program. All kids can participate. And what they get is great prestige. They get some money to continue developing their product. Three of our teams are in the patent queue right now.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is getting very close to commercializing their product. And we are just trying to grow the innovative workforce for the future. So, and it's, you know, Pete's legacy. Pete was a kid that got thrown out of school in the 11th grade because he couldn't read or spell.
Right.
And so we figure there were a lot of kids that needed a shot and needed their moonshot, though that's what we're trying to do.
That's great. Give us a quick example of something that the kids have been working on.
Well, this one team that won last year, we challenged kids in renewable energy, and we're doing that this year as well. And, in fact, this year we're making a space bar that we think will be of use for NASA. But last year these kids came up with a thermal heating system that generated energy out of the ocean. They were featured in Popular Science magazine. The chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission contacted them because their project is so smart, and he wants to help them develop their product.
Wow, that's great. That's
pretty
great.
Cool stuff.
What's the website we can learn more?
It's conradawards.org.
Easy enough to remember, conradawards.org, and we'll certainly post that on our show website as well. Nancy, we're running a little bit out of time now with you, but we sure do appreciate it. And I just want to tell you, you know, a lot of people in the space community held a lot of great memories and think Pete near and dear to their heart, and you really are carrying on his legacy. And thanks for all that you're doing to help assure our future in space. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's my honor to carry his legacy.
Great. And Nancy, thanks. We'll talk to you very soon again, okay?
Okey-doke. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Nancy Conrad, the wife of the late Pete Conrad, commander of Apollo 12. And when we return in just about 5 minutes here, we're going to take our five-minute built-in hold at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be joined by one of the Apollo 12 crew members. Alan Bean, the fourth man to walk on the moon, is going to be with us on the phone from Houston. Your chance to call in 768-1240 and talk to a real live moonwalker. When we're back after this five-minute break, you're listening to WMMB. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. See you on the other side.
Houston Endeavor, roll program.
Roger, roll, Endeavor.
Now is the time for shuttle program employees to chart a new course.
OTCS, go.
A course that will take their careers beyond the last space shuttle mission to new job opportunities and horizons.
Pilots, go.
Brevard Workforce is helping our community shuttle engineers, technicians, and administrative workers to launch new careers through the Aerospace Workforce Transition Program.
Houston Flight is go.
While they continue to safely launch the remaining shuttle missions. Through the programs, resources, and services, aerospace workers can map out a strategy, undergo skill assessments, take workshops, update degrees and certifications, or receive education funding. Assistance is available and ready.
PTC, go.
Contact Brevard Workforce today and take the first easy step to prepare for a successful post-shuttle career in aerospace or other industries.
The launch team is ready to proceed.
Call Brevard Workforce at 394-0556. That's 394-0556. Visit them online at launchnewcareers.com or Twitter them at launchcareers.
You are go for launch.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
Again, welcome back to the second half of Space Talk right here on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. You're welcome to join in by giving us a call at 321-768-1240 or send us email to spacetalking@aol.com. We're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 12 moon landing today, and let me tell you that he walked on the moon with Pete Conrad during Apollo 12. He commanded the second mission to the Skylab workshop, spending 59 days in Earth orbit. And then he went on to a whole new career as a successful painter and an author. And someday I will own, listening up to my mom and dad, someday I will own an original work of painting, original work of art by none other than Alan Bean, who joins us by phone from Houston. Welcome, Captain Bean. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing good, Jim. Good idea. I'll be anxiously awaiting your phone call, because I'd love to have you own one, that cares as much about space as you do.
Well, it's good to talk to you. It's been a few years, but we've been following you and watching you, and you seem to be doing very well for yourself.
Well, I'm working hard at trying to preserve one of the great adventures of humankind, which was the Apollo program. And I'm often asking myself, when Neil went to the moon and came back, was that bigger than Magellan going around the Earth? I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Boy,
what your listeners think?
Yeah, that's true. I think historically it ranks right up there. And I always get a kick out of people, and sometimes I wonder if not the Apollo 8 mission wasn't even more historically significant than the landing itself. You know, the idea that we were first leaving Earth orbit and we could decide whether to stay or go, and we chose to go.
Yeah, I think it is for insiders, but it appears to me, looking at what other people want to put in history books, I think the fact that Neil actually touched the moon seems more important to the layman than
yeah.
Maybe it does to us. I don't know.
Well, and let's talk about Apollo 12 now, because, again, that often gets, you know, lost in the shadow of Apollo 11. I mean, we recall, you know, and again, you'd have to know some of your space trivia. Of course, you certainly know this, having lived the flight. But we recall Apollo 12 in the space community as the one that got hit by lightning as the one that landed close to the Surveyor spacecraft on the moon. Some even remembered as the one we didn't have the camera for. Sorry about that. But now, 40 years later, Captain Bean, what do you think? What do you think Apollo 12's place in history should be?
Well, I think probably we all should be supporting the primary goal of getting humans to the moon and back safely. Now, you know, the goal was just to get a team or even one to the moon and back, but really Apollo was designed to get a number there and back, which we actually accomplished.
Sure.
We didn't, and so I think just being part of that and part of this great adventure, difficult, impossible dream at the time when I came into the space program in 1963, it was an impossible dream. Yet in 1969 in July when Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon, well, suddenly it became possible.
Yeah, isn't that something? Now, we're going to take a question here, Captain, if you don't mind. Michael from Palm Bay has a question for us about, looks like about speed of reentry. Michael,
yeah.
Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And I'm very privileged to speak to the former astronaut. Thank you. As for velocity, why do you have to achieve over 17,000 miles per hour to achieve orbit instead of, let's say, 15,000 miles?
Okay, interesting question. Michael, thank you for that. Captain Bean, you want to take a shot at orbital mechanics, or would you like me to have the headache?
Sorry, Jim, he dropped off. He's calling back just now.
Okay, well, then I'll quickly answer Michael, the quick answer is to get to that orbit, you have to go fast enough whereas you are moving fast and the Earth is curving below you, you're basically following the curve around the planet. At that altitude, 150, 200 miles up, 250 miles up, it's all, generally speaking, 17,500 miles an hour. If you were to go slower than that, then you wouldn't be going fast enough where you would fall and you would hit the Earth. But if you keep falling and you're going fast enough where as you fall, and this is hard to describe in radio, but as you fall, you're falling around the Earth. Now, as you go up higher in the altitude, you don't have to go as fast to stay in orbit. You have to go that fast to get into orbit to the point where you're circling the Earth. But then as you go higher up in that orbit, you can actually go slower and slower. So think about what that means. At geosynchronous orbit, 22,300 miles up, you're only going about 1,000 miles an hour to stay in orbit. Or in other words, you're going about the same speed as the Earth is rotating. So your satellite appears to stay in the same place over the equator. So as you drop down lower and lower toward the Earth, you actually pick up speed, and it's one of the peculiarities of orbital mechanics that to slow down, you have to speed up, and to speed up, you have to slow down, and that's where we all need to start taking some aspirin to understand orbital mechanics. So that's the quick answer. Captain Bean, are we back with you, sir?
Yes,
okay.
We are, and to add to that, the moon essentially stays in orbit around the Earth, and it only goes around the Earth once every 28 days.
Right.
So you can see that, what you were talking about is very accurate.
And it's getting that initial speed that's important. Well, let's go back to, and I asked Nancy Conrad about this earlier, and she said it was dead on. I want to get your opinion. You know, my favorite episode, truthfully, sincerely, not just because you're on, is from the Tom Hanks series From the Earth to the Moon, is the Apollo 12 episode. I can watch that thing over and over again, and it was really neat because it was told more or less from your perspective. Tell me how much of that was reality and how much of that was fake.
I thought 100% was reality.
Really?
Yes, but what I do know as an artist, that to make things interesting, you've got to take reality and sort of amplify it a little bit.
Right.
You know, make it even more strong or even more beautiful or whatever you're trying to do. So I think what they did, they never told a single thing in that episode that wasn't true. But then when you got the emotion in it, they made the emotions a little bit more than maybe what we actually experienced. So all the facts were there. Everything was just right. We were great fans, had fun. But when they invented a situation. They didn't invent the situation, but when they made the situation in that movie, then
right.
they, you know, made it a little more exciting than maybe it was, or something like that. That's show business, though.
Right. Well, and of course, you're all are test pilots, and you have a very methodical way of thinking and a very logical way, and you sort of do take the emotion out because you want to report the facts, you want to report the numbers and the data. You don't want to sit there and revel in the wonder and poetry and imagination of it all.
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's kind of part of the training you get. And I think that it's, you know, it's one of the problems I think we've had convincing the public of the wonder of space flight, because people get up there and say, which isn't true, even close to true, oh, well, it's not any more dangerous than driving to the supermarket. Well, that's crazy. That's a crazy thought. But people say that because they want to be cool. They want to be brave or something. And we do know just by looking at the accident rate of the shuttle, it's not exactly like driving to the supermarket. We've lost a shuttle every 57 flights. I'd
yeah.
hate to think that every 57 flights to the supermarket, I'm getting ready to get killed. So,
yeah.
No, it's but that's just the tradition and the culture of piloting as opposed to the movies. Now, the movies, they would say it's going to happen every 25 times. See, that's how they exaggerate.
Well, and yet what's so fascinating about you, sir, is that, you know what, you do have the ability to see both sides. And in your paintings and what you did, what you're doing with your artwork, you know, really shows that you've been able to take those feelings and those emotions and literally add color to what is an otherwise gray landscape with your moon stuff.
Yes, and it hasn't been easy. I often say, you know, I couldn't do these paintings because I can't go back to the moon and pose somebody that way, so I've got to use models and have just the right lighting and this and that and the other, and then I say, I need the engineering to do that. But then I say, if I want to show what you said, the emotion, picking out the events that are more interesting, then I've sort of got to get away from the engineering aspect or the astronaut aspect, the calm, cool astronaut, and kind of say, what was the most exciting thing? What was the most interesting thing that I think the audience would want to remember about any of the Apollo missions? So it's both sides. It's both sides of the brain to do it, to be an artist.
Yeah, and that's something. And you've been able to combine them. You still have enough spacesuit material where you're putting that into your canvases?
Yes, I do. But I'm telling you, I like the flag that they gave me from my suit. Now the part that's to the right of, let's say, to the right of the stars is all gone and in paintings. All I've got is the blue stars, that field, and then the red and white stripes underneath it. So I'm using it up, but at the same time, I'm 77. So I hope to be around for a while, but I won't be around forever. And it'd be nice if they ran out the same day.
I was going to say, let's make sure the flag runs out before you do. That's great. Captain Bean, if you would stand by for a minute, we're going to take a two-minute break and then come back and ask you some more about where you think we need to be going in space and get your reaction to the Augustine panel report as well. But in the meantime, we want to invite you to call in last chance, 768-1240, *1240 on the AT&T wireless phone. And we're going to be back in just a couple more minutes with Moonwalker, Apollo 12 astronaut Alan Bean in just a little bit here. Stand by.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And here with our final few moments with Captain Alan Bean, the fourth man to walk on the moon during the Apollo 12 flight in November of 1969. Captain Bean talking to us from his home and studio in Houston. Is that where you are today?
Absolutely. I'm in my studio, and I'm looking at the latest painting I'm working on and thinking about coming down to Cape Canaveral here on November the 7th. Well, actually, I'm coming down the day before for the autograph show there at
right.
Kennedy Space Center Vista Complex, and then the night, Saturday night, the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation is hosting a gala about celebrating our 40th anniversary, and tickets are available, $200 each. So yep. Come on out. There's about 25 of us that are astronauts or mission controllers or other people in the space business, and I think you'd have a nice time. We've got a nice program plan. Dick Gordon and I have been working on it, and we think you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun and a great chance to raise some money for deserving kids working hard.
That's exactly right, and we'll be there, and I hope that some of your listeners come too.
Well, that sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. I can't see you that night. My mother's 70th birthday that day.
All right. So mothers come first before anything else. We'll miss you, but tell her hello, and apparently she was a good mother, because here you are.
There you go. And she's listening, and I'll get the phone call the minute the show is over with. But
tell her she did good.
Good. Well, that's good. That's a birthday present right there.
Sure.
Well, you're talking about the painting before you. What is ahead for you here now? I know you just had the new book come out this summer, Painting Apollo, I believe it was called.
Yes, Painting Apollo, First Artist on Another World. Right now, up in Washington at the Air and Space Museum, there's an exhibition of my paintings there that'll be there till January the 13th. Anybody that's interested in space would love that exhibition, because it's paintings of what we did in Apollo and some artifacts that the Air and Space Museum has there. For example, I did a couple of paintings of Pete and I cutting off the Surveyor camera. Mm-hmm. Right across from my paintings is the Surveyor camera we brought back to Earth.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
It is. I did a painting of Neil Armstrong as he loaded the first rocks in the rock box. Right across from that painting
is the rock box.
He had loaded the rocks in. So
oh,
there's a rover there, and my spacesuit's there from Apollo. It's really a great exhibition. I did a couple of books this year, but mostly I'm trying to record for long after I'm gone, and maybe even after your listener's gone, what humans did achieving this impossible dream that was Apollo. I will say this. Building the space station, repairing the Hubble Space Telescope, those are impossible dreams too. So it's not like we quit doing impossible things at NASA at the end of Apollo program. No, that was just one that history will remember real well. But I think people at NASA, there at the Cape and at Houston and JPL and these other things, they are doing impossible dreams. Achieving impossible dreams or working towards it every single day. It's an amazing accomplishment by human beings every day.
Well, and the Augustine panel comes out this week with some of their recommendations or some of the studies underway. We may not hear exactly what direction the White House wants to take until the budget comes out early next year. But all that said, with all the hand-wringing going on, do you think this is all good? Is this necessary? Are we heading in the right direction?
I think we're headed in the right direction. We're not going as fast as I would like. But that's why we have elections every 4 years and 2 years in some cases, to let the American people decide what they want their leadership to do, or pick the leaders that are going to decide these things. So we're anxious that the president will say, I've decided to move ahead to keep America at the forefront of space exploration. We know you're going to need $3 or $4 more billion a year, maybe run it up to 22 or 23 or something. And he decides to do it. But at the same time, if he doesn't, people elect him president for a reason.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he wants to do this, but he doesn't phone me and tell me, so I wish he would, so I could tell you.
Well, your work certainly inspires a lot to pursue that. And let's talk about your work one last minute here. As I recall, in talking to you years ago, we had talked about whether or not you would ever start doing kind of fictional stuff, flights of fancy, the way it might look someday. And you at that time were sticking to what you knew, historical stuff, historically accurate stuff. Is that still where you're headed? Are you ready to start dreaming and doing futuristic stuff? Or are you still into the historically accurate?
I'm into historically accurate, with the exception if there's something that I wish we did. For example, I did a painting. We all know that Al Shepard hit the golf ball on the moon.
Right.
Great. And I asked Pete Conrad, why didn't we think of something like that? And he says, well, we don't play golf. I said, well, what could we have done? He said, well, we like to watch football. We could have taken a football and thrown it around and shown it on TV. If I hadn't broken the TV, he
yeah,
said
right.
that. He said that. And I did a painting called Are You Ready for Some Football?
Oh.
But I show in the painting that really we didn't do that, but we wish we'd thought about it. But I know that other present-day astronauts, when they go back to the moon, will look at that painting and they'll say, let's take a soccer ball.
Yeah.
Let's take a basketball. Let's take a football.
That's right. And if one team were named the Vikings and the other team was named the Steelers, the Vikings would beat the Steelers by at least 7 points. But that's another.
Maybe they would. Maybe they would. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this. If we had done that, which we didn't even think of till after we got home, if we'd done that, they'd show that footage at halftime in the Super Bowl.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
Someday the NFL will play in big domes on the moon.
And I
maybe
can't,
it's 200 years from now, maybe 500, I don't know.
And can you imagine the expansion team in the away game? The away game. So,
no, all of this is going to be great adventures for future humans.
And that can't think of any other better way to end my interview with you, sir. Thank you so much. Again, we'll miss you here, but we'll stay in touch and keep an eye on what you're doing, and good luck. And someday I'll get that commission to you about that painting.
Okay, good. And I hope some of your listeners will get a chance to come out to the Kennedy Space Visitor Center Visitor Complex for the autograph show Saturday and Sunday, or the gala, our 40th anniversary Saturday night. So it's going to be nice.
It'll be fun.
Of them are going to be nice.
Good enough, sir. Well, thanks again for spending time with me today, and we'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Thanks, Jim. Bye.
Thanks, Alan. Bye-bye. Okay, well, there you go. How does it get any better than that? Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Moonwalker Alan Bean on the show here with us today. Well, look, let's look forward here. Again, Tuesday morning, 6 a.m., Bill Mix Show live from the Kennedy Space Center with our live coverage of the Ares 1X test launch. You will not want to miss any of that. Certainly the conversation leading up to it, a critically important launch for the Space Coast for a variety of reasons. And next week, former shuttle astronaut Tom Jones will join us, and we're going to be talking not only shuttle stuff, but his interest in exploring near-Earth asteroids, near-Earth objects. Certainly a spooky kind of discussion for a spooky Halloween day. But that's it for now. Stay in touch with us on WMMBAM.com throughout the week. Keywords, Space Talk. And we'll be back next week with more again with Tom Jones. This is Jim Bankey with Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Have a great week.